Hello, and welcome to episode 50 of Timing Comics, the comics podcast devoted to the time-conscious comic book fan from the time-conscious comic book fan. I'm your host, Levin Ehenstein, here to discuss the time it takes to read comics time after time here on Timing Comics. As you know, we devote this podcast to the time-conscious comics reader. Have 5 minutes free and want to know what comic you can read? This is the place for you. We cover current comics sorted by the time it takes an average reader, that would be me, Levin Ehenstein, to read those comics. Let's get right into it for this week. First up is Jungle Girl number 0, 25 cents from Dynamite Comics. 2 minutes and 5 seconds. The perfect book to read on that commercial break while watching Heroes or Smallville. Have 6 minutes free? Try Tales of the Sinestro Corps, Parallax from DC at 5 minutes 50 seconds. Or Streets of Glory from Avatar at 5 minutes and 52 seconds. Clocking in at 8 minutes and 37 seconds was World War Hulk number 4 from Marvel. Countdown number 32 from DC came in at 9 minutes and 52 seconds. And if you have a whopping 19 minutes and 1 second free, you can check out Marvel Comics Presents number 1. That's all for this week. This has been Levin Ehenstein for Timing Comics. And remember, there's always comics for the time you have.
Yeah, so I said to her, I says, like, what's really going on with life? And she didn't really, what the hell was that? Welcome to episode 49 of Comic Timing. I'm Ian Levinstein, joined by the co-host back from his absence, mostly due to the fact that he wasn't at CGS 300, Brent Cassino. What's up, Brent?
It's called 3,000 miles, Florida. Yeah. Hello.
Hey, there was at least one dude from Florida there that actually drove all the way to CGS 300.
Yes, I know. Wait, was it Andrew Charapar? How old is he?
Yeah, Charapar, yeah. Older than you.
How old is he?
Older than you.
Older than me? Does he have a real job?
Maybe.
Which translates to?
Money.
Money, right, exactly. Thank you.
And what don't you have?
A real job translates to money.
Money. Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened there at the beginning there. I sort of like got knocked unconscious for a minute and then woke back up. So I'm.
That was like jumping through the source wall, man.
I know, dude. Tell me about it. Remember the 52? I felt like I was on like Earth 3 or something like that. But yeah, whatever happened at the beginning there happened. I'm not going back and changing it. But yeah, we're going to talk about Superman Doomsday here. Might be joined by somebody else later on, might not be. It all depends on whether or not they're done with their thing. So for now, it's just Brent and myself. Hasn't been like that in a while. But it makes up for the fact that he wasn't on the last couple episodes. Right, Brent? It's just you.
Just the last episode.
Well, dude. Oh, yeah. I forgot. The crossover. You were on the crossover.
It's just one.
Yeah, you were on the
Which hasn't been released yet.
Fuck!
It will have been released after CGS 300.
Yeah. See, this is why releasing
things... This is a time paradox.
Dude, I know. Tell me about it. You know, that's why when you release things, like, out of order like that, it messes with your head. I don't know what week it is. I don't know what year it is. I don't know what time period it is. I don't even know what time of the day it is right now. All I know is that I'm sitting here in front of my computer talking.
Well, it wouldn't have been out of order if Rav had sat on his ass like he usually does and released it, like, next week.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised that he released it so quick. Listen to part one. It's very, very fun. It's good times. We already mentioned that on the previous episode, but I want to mention it again. Geeks United's a very, very good show. It's just a yearly show. We didn't expect it to come out, but... And hopefully he came out with the Stargate one by the time this episode's out. But anyway, yeah, we're talking about Superman Doomsday. We're talking about the comic, we're talking about the DVD, mostly the DVD, but we're going to compare the DVD to the comic. Now, for those of you who don't know, the first official straight-to-DVD movie release in a long time of DC Comics was Superman Doomsday. The last one to come out before that, if I remember correctly, was the Teen Titans Go one, right? Teen Titans Do Tokyo or whatever it was.
That came out?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Oh, see, I'm not in tune with Teen Titans Go.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, the last one that mattered before that was Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, which I absolutely loved. And I actually just bought, like, today from Amazon.com finally because I had a bootleg copy. So I finally actually got myself the real one. But, yeah, this is the first...
Did you get the unrated version?
I got the unrated, yeah. I got the unrated because the rated one is pathetic. That's the one where, like, they take out all the gore and violence.
I don't know which one I have, but I have it. I got the one at Best Buy.
Okay, do you have the one where he actually gets stabbed?
I don't know. I watched it over the summer. I can't remember.
Were there hookers?
I don't think so.
Did Tim shoot anybody, or did Joker get electrocuted?
He got electrocuted, I think.
Yeah, you got the bad version.
Aw, we're still good.
Well, yeah, it's good. It's just the other one's, like, a lot better. So if you get a chance, pick up the unrated one. But, yeah, this is the first one of the new releases, ones that don't involve the previous universe at all. And it was all right, but we'll get into our further thoughts. But general comments, I guess we'll start with you, Brent. What'd you think of Superman Doomsday?
It was a give and take. I bought it the day it came out only because I went to Blockbuster trying to rent it. Mm-hmm. Because that's where I got the Marvel ones and the first Hellboy one.
Okay.
Before, they didn't have any at all.
Ooh.
They didn't have a box for me to look at. Meaning that other people rented them.
Okay.
They did not. It's like they did not carry it.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if it's that way in your town or in any of the listeners' towns or that way it is now here in Gainesville. I haven't been back to look because I bought it. But, you know.
Well, I haven't been to a Blockbuster in a while, but when I went to the last Blockbuster I was at, they kept the box out, or at least they kept it available to look at, but if it wasn't there, it wasn't there.
Right.
Yeah.
Usually if they're out of something, you just see the empty boxes with the covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's none behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not
wasn't like that.
Yeah.
Wasn't like that here.
Ah, well. Well, that probably also means
meaning that it doesn't exist. they didn't order any.
Yeah, maybe. It's possible. I don't know. Or either that or they had like two copies and they just said the hell with it.
Or didn't put them on the shelf that day.
Yeah.
It's release day. Who knows?
Yeah, it's possible. But, yeah, so your response is eh?
Yeah, I mean, it has good parts and it has bad parts. Or not bad parts, just disappointing. Mm-hmm. I think on the whole it's a good film. It's just disappointing that we know the regular story and how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then the departures that they took.
Well, what I was expecting when I first heard about Superman Doomsday was that we were going to get something that was more like a Dan Jurgens style, because that's what they announced at first, that these were going to be movies that were a lot more like their original comic versions. Obviously, the Darwin Cook New Frontier that's coming out is going to be in Darwin Cook's New Frontier style. So I was expecting this one would be animated like Dan Jurgens. And that's not what we got. Instead, we got, well, something that sort of looked like the Superman the Animated Series, only with weird lines on Superman's face.
You know what? I think those were Dan Jurgens' cheekbones.
Are you serious?
That's the Dan Jurgens style right there.
Okay, if that's Dan Jurgens' style, I have to go back and read all my Dan Jurgens comics again.
I'm just kidding. Like I don't really think
right.
it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right, yeah. I guess they were looking for a more mature tone to it, but I don't know. It felt like something that could have been more gory even than it was. This was supposed to be rated PG-13.
Yeah, that was one of my big, one of the big comments I was going to make. It says PG-13 on the back for action violence. Mm-hmm. Now, we've all seen Batman Begins, right? That's pretty violent.
Yeah.
Some other PG-13 movies that were violent. Aliens vs. Predator, however crappy it was, you still had people's heads getting ripped off with green blood.
Yeah.
Right? And people died. The Ring, pretty fucking violent and scary.
How about X2?
X2, yeah. Violent. People getting stabbed. X3 is kind of violent.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or do all other PG-13 movies show blood except animated ones?
Yes, I would go that route. Well, one of the reasons why I didn't like the cut version of Batman Beyond Return of the Joker is because they cut all the blood out. That's when WB decided that blood doesn't really exist. And that it's just make-believe, like monkeys evolving into humans.
Well, here, you can count the appearance of blood, like, on your fingers. Superman, two lines out of his mouth when he dies. Mm-hmm. The line of blood that goes across Lois's cheek. And, oh yeah, Toyman.
Yeah.
I wanted more blood.
And Toyman, I'm not quite sure if this was the Toyman I wanted to see, really.
Well, let's go back to your general comments. I thought more violence, I would have liked to see. Well, not more violence as in gore, but it still felt like JLU sometimes where they're pulled away from the hits. Mm-hmm. I still had scenes of, you know, in the Lex Luthor beating up the clone Superman. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, spoilers. This whole thing's going to be spoiler-filled.
Yeah, well, I'll put that at the – well, wait, there is not going to be a very beginning to this one. All right, fine. Well, yeah, spoilers. Right. Yeah.
Whoop, whoop. Yeah. So Lex Luthor's beating up the clone Superman. Right? Remember that? With the kryptonite gloves and all that?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of us seeing the clone Superman's face getting the shit beat out of it with the gloves,
yeah,
we pretend like we're Superman and see Lex Luthor's kind of fist coming at us.
Yeah.
But really, I don't think we ever saw the fist. We just kind of see like half of an arm and some action lines.
Yeah.
So you're still not seeing the hit, and then they pull back and do a wide shot, and instead of seeing the red lights and stuff, they go all artsy-fartsy, and it's a black silhouette. So you're still not seeing the hits. You're just seeing shadows.
I guarantee
Which is what it was in the Batman cartoon and JLU, and that's still, like, I know Bruce Timm did this, and it's in the Bruce Timm style, but come on, loosen the fuck up already.
All I have to do is mention the Superman Shazam episode of JLU to say that that was more violence than we got in Superman Doomsday.
Yeah, that, and I recently just watched JLU since school started, and I love that episode, and, you know, so I'm all caught up on JLU and all that stuff, so I can compare it.
Good, yeah. And even that, what did you think of the animation itself? I mean, again, we already made comments about Superman's chin, but other than that, was it at least clean animation to you?
I thought it was pretty clean. It was pretty smooth, and it looked really, really sharp. I put it in my TV earlier this evening. Like, I watched it the first time, and I put it in there, and it looks really sharp. And then usually that's fine, but when I put it in my DVD player on my computer, it's kind of grainy, at least the JLU episodes anyway, and any other movie. And I put it in there, and it still looks sharp. That impressed me.
My ultimate test is usually how it looks on a big screen. Well, that's how I saw it. I saw it on the huge screens I had at San Diego Comic-Con, and it looked beautiful on there. It looked absolutely beautiful. I mean, there were no herky-jerky moments. There was no grain to be found. It looked like a cinematic movie to me, even though it was on DVD. Because I'm sure that this was probably just a DVD copy that they put in there. You know, nothing special, really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, why would they do anything extra special for, you know, San Diego other than just popping in the DVD? The only thing that we got before that you didn't get in the actual release was we got a little message from Adam Baldwin, who played Superman, you know, saying sorry he couldn't be there, but he was filming Chuck and, you know, everybody enjoy the movie, blah, 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 blah. That's really it. Other than that, it was the actual full version that was released on DVD.
But, I mean, these animated movies, like, I don't think they get a lot more money. Or maybe it's just other people. Because Ultimate Avengers and the Iron Man's – well, I won't say Iron Man. That was kind of good animation.
Yeah.
But Ultimate Avengers is choppy.
Yes, very choppy.
You've seen those, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Doctor Strange. Okay. Doctor Strange, actually, even though it's a bit choppy, it's stylistic, and I like that.
Okay, I have not seen that one yet, so I'll withhold.
That one's the best of the bunch. If definitely go out and buy it, or at least rent it, and you'll love it.
Yeah, they have that at Blockbuster. I'll probably rent that one.
Cool.
But the last Hellboy one, Blood and Iron – I thought was kind of choppy.
Okay. I have it, but I haven't actually watched it yet. I guess comparing this to other Warner Brothers animations that have been put out, it was the quality style animation that you have grown accustomed to.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not Disney animation where they animated it in America. They shipped it overseas, like all the Batman cartoons and all that. I think they did it in Korea, so this is probably the same studio there.
Probably.
Right, that did JLU.
Yeah.
But I think it is an improvement over the TV show. I do think it's – the animation does improve over the TV show, and that's probably due to budget. I remember listening to CGS when they had Tad Stones on like three times.
Yeah.
Talking about the Hellboy. Definitely go listen to those guys if you want to learn about animation and stuff.
Agreed.
And just about budget. He was talking about how their budget isn't that big, so they have to take cuts on the animation and stuff like that. And when you watch those movies, you can kind of tell. But he says that with the success of each one, you get a little bit of a bigger budget. And, you know, hopefully we'll see some more Hellboy stuff. But that's what I'm kind of basing my judgments on, is what he's told us in those interviews.
Well, what I'm going to base it on is actually what Dan DiDio said about New Frontier. I'm not sure if the same thing was about Superman Doomsday. But he himself says many times in that little trailer they did for New Frontier that these are big budget movies. That they're putting a lot behind these. And they want to make these as good quality as stuff that you would find in the live-action stuff that Warner Brothers is putting out from DC properties. Obviously, this is going to be a bit different because obviously it's animated, but they want the animation to look crisp and clear and smooth and not make you feel like you're getting cheated by the fact that it's on DVD and not on a big screen.
Well, I didn't feel cheated here.
Well, good.
So just say that is good.
Good, definitely.
Now, the New Frontier trailer you saw at San Diego, was that like 8 minutes long?
That was the one that ended up on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there is one on DVD. It's a extended featurette, and they show very little of the actual movie.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's like this thing is like 15 minutes long, and I bet they took that whatever how long it was, 2 minute or 1 minute trailer, and took all the little bits of animation and sprinkled them.
Ours was actually about 8 or 9 minutes long. Ours was like a shorter version of the one that ended up on the DVD.
Okay.
Ours had very little in it, but you actually got to see animation, and they went a little further into the actual, like, voice cast, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah. Ours, they just mentioned the voice cast in passing by showing, like shots of them, and we don't actually see anything past that, really.
Okay.
Yeah, but they did.
Yeah, we saw Lucy Lawless actually doing, like, the voice of Wonder Woman and stuff like that.
Yeah, that
so.
We didn't get. We got to see her doing those, like, punches, but we didn't actually get to hear the audio for it.
This is kind of a tangent, but I kind of liked what they did, even though I thought it was too long. It was, like, 8 minutes of people talking about the damn thing.
Yeah.
And it felt like it should be on that DVD. And I'm sure this is, like, a cut-up version of whatever's going to be on that one.
It was a featurette that wanted to wet your whistle, pretty much.
Basically. But I'm thinking that they shot the behind-the-scenes stuff for that movie. Mm-hmm. And then they said, those guys, okay, take your 40 minutes that you had or 30 minutes and cut it down to 8. And we'll put it on the Superman Doomsday DVD. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Because it has that same kind of professionalism, and I won't be surprised if they have the same blue screen backgrounds that they did on this one when that one actually comes out in January or whatever. I don't know when the next one comes out, though.
That is kind of funny to me, then, that they made two different versions, one that was shorter for San Diego Comic-Con and one made specifically for the Superman Doomsday DVD, and then they're going to make an even longer one for the New Frontier one.
Well, that's just like me conjecturing.
One. Okay, all right. Well, that's why, to me, it kind of feels like...
Because why would you shoot it twice, though? Okay, yeah, so they shot in a 40-minute one, right?
Yeah.
And then they cut it down to 8, and then they cut it down to the 3-minute thing you saw.
All right. I'll give you that much.
Like any movie that they make, you know, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the only reason why that featurette was on there...
It's because you were at a panel for all of the movies, right?
No, actually. This was just the screening for Superman Doomsday. They tacked it on to the end to wet your whistle for a New Frontier. What I'm talking about is the reason why I think it ended up on the Superman Doomsday one was because there were some people who were poo-pooing Superman Doomsday that were like, hey, this doesn't look anything like what we expected. You told us it was going to be Dan Jurgens style, and yet New Frontier looks so amazing and incredible. Let's just wait for that. So I have a feeling
like, well, you can get your first look on the DVD.
Sure, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure not that many people would buy an entire DVD just to get a taste of something else, but there might have been people who went straight to that and then watched the movie.
If there is one redeeming factor about this DVD, and let me tell you, Ian, you need to go rent it or buy it.
Okay.
It is the comprehensive documentary. This is from the back of the DVD case.
Okay.
Requiem and Rebirth, Superman Lives, about how the DC Comics team decided Superman's fate.
Huh. Okay.
And this thing is like, I want to say 45 minutes to an hour long.
Okay.
It is not 15 minutes. This thing is long.
Cool.
This is something they could put on a comic book cable channel.
Very cool.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that they could cut up into an hour show or whatever.
Like put it on G4 or something like that, even though it's not.
Something like that.
Yeah, okay.
It's got John Bogdanov, you know, all the artists and writers. Dan Jurgens is there. Louise Simonson, one of the writers, is there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm forgetting everybody who worked on the damn thing. Carl Kersel, or Kessel.
Yeah.
Didn't is on there.
Did they have Eminem? Because he did some art.
I don't think they had Eminem.
Okay.
Roger Stern is on there. Jeanette Kahn, who was the executive editor or whatever at the time, is on there. The really scary-looking lady, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was just going to be them talking about it in comic book pages and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they have, like, video of one of their Superman summits.
Oh, very cool.
Which is, you know, they're all meeting together and they map out on, like, a big whiteboard.
You mean the one that Raph has always wanted to be a part of?
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is the thing, Raph's dream, so hopefully Raph has seen this. They say the whole thing. Originally, it was going to be Superman gets married. Because at that time, you know, in the real story, Superman, Lois Lane knows who Superman is.
Yeah.
But Lois and Clark had started up that same year,
okay,
the TV show, and they wanted to do that down the line. Mm-hmm. So they pushed that off, but still had wanted to do this big story.
Yeah.
So then they said, well, I forget who it was now, but they were like, well, let's just kill him. So that's the genesis of this.
And I'm already imagining in my head, like, somebody who looks like Hans Moleman just raising their hand and like, so any suggestions I want to do? Like, let's just kill him.
So, and it's divided up into four parts. So, like, three of those parts is the story. So, one of them is the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is World Without Superman. And the third one's Return of Superman.
Uh-huh.
They don't go into story specifics about this is how he comes back and, oh, readers had a problem with this. They just give you, like, overview. Doomsday, here's how we came up with him. He dies. Here's how we came up with the idea. Oh, I really liked the Justice League scene. Oh, I cried as I was writing it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I cried as I was editing it. Stuff like that.
Oh, I cried as I got my paycheck.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, like, the fourth one is the actual release. So they have news footage of, like, the death of Superman Day when they did the midnight release or whatever, and the black armbands and everything that you hear that I've never seen, I got to see on this documentary.
Yeah.
So for me, it was really worthwhile to watch. Well, so that's – if you know, if somebody is totally wants to bash this thing, this is what makes the DVD worth a rent or a purchase.
Awesome. Yeah, well, now you've just convinced me to get this from Netflix. So, yay. I had no reason to see it a second time because, again, it's good. It's just nothing, not something I can watch over and over again. I probably will rent it just for that now.
You're welcome.
Well, and I'm remembering now when I watched Superman Returns, they had that documentary in the Ultimate box set where they talk about, we got lucky. Absolutely nothing else happened in the world the day this comic book came out. When Superman died, nothing else happened. Just like when Captain America died. It was a very quiet day in the news, so that became a headline. And that's why Superman Doomsday ended up selling over 1 million copies.
Yeah, there's more of that on here, and more.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, going back to the actual animated, and again, we'll talk more about the comic also, the voice cast, because that's as important as the animation, as important as the story. You got to believe that this person sounds like the character. Give me your pluses and your negatives on the voice cast.
Adam Baldwin is good. He sounds similar enough in tone and register to the guy on JLU that I could, you know, it could pass for him. Mm-hmm. It's a little different, but, you know, he has the same kind of attitude, I think.
Okay.
So that was pretty good. Jimmy Olsen, I guess he was okay. He wasn't in it much.
That was Adam Wiley who got to play him.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know either. I'm looking up his past stuff here. He was actually in – oh, he plays Brainiac 5 on Legion of Superheroes.
Okay.
So he's got that to his credit. Let's see here. Anything else? He was Brad Langford in Gilmore Girls. I've never watched Gilmore Girls, so I wouldn't be able to tell you anything about that, but maybe this is familiar to you. Oh, he played the Blind Bandit in Avatar. Yay. Okay. Wow, I sounded so girly just now. Oh, all right. He various voices in Batman Beyond. So, you know what? He's a regular when it comes to DC animation.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. I think I liked Anne Heche as Lois Lane, and that's the biggest thing that I think people might have a problem with.
That was one of my problems, but let me hear why you liked her.
I liked her. I thought she comes off as Lois Lane should. She's headstrong. Mm-hmm. She's determined. She doesn't give up. She's not weak. She's not the damsel in distress, basically.
Okay.
And it reminded me enough of the Lois Lane from the Superman animated show to like it. And it reminded me enough of Terry Hatcher in Lois and Clark. I really liked her Lois Lane.
Yeah, more Terry Hatcher, less of Dana Delaney.
But she's not the pansy she is in the movies, right?
Yeah. And that
Margot Kidder, let's face it, didn't do much. Kate Bosworth, even less. What really made me like her as Lois Lane, though, was the scene with Lois and Clark's mom and Ma Kent.
Okay.
I really felt that the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
That's what sealed the deal for me.
Yeah. That was actually one of my favorite scenes in the movie, so I can understand why that actually sealed it for you. My only problem with her, and actually I liked Martha Kent's voice more than I liked Lois Lane's. I felt that was almost perfect casting. Swoozie Kurtz played Martha Kent. Swoozie Kurtz I've actually heard before, if the name sounds as familiar to me as I think it does. In fact, actually, let me just bring it up here. Oh, that's why. Okay. She's in Pushing Daisies, and I've been watching that, so that's why it resonated in my head. But she has previously voiced characters in American Dad. She was in the show Huff as Madeline Sullivan. She's been around, and it's a voice I've definitely heard before. It sounded motherly. It sounded like somebody who actually raised Superman. You know, she had that, like, homely Kansas feel to her voice that she needed to have. So that was a perfect pick. My problem with Lois Lane, Anne Heche as Lois Lane, is that way too often, she sounded like she was reading from a script. There wasn't enough emotion in her voice most of the time. I don't know, it just fell flat to me. It's not the fault of the writing, it's the fault of the voice actor there. I can understand why people might have actually liked her. To me, it felt like she just didn't have enough oomph to pull off being Lois Lane. I've heard Dana Delaney too many times, maybe, but she just didn't do it for me. Adam Baldwin, good Superman, needs to work on his Clark Kent. Very good Superman. It's just his Clark Kent wasn't convincing to me, which will happen.
Clark Kent wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, but the few scenes he was Clark Kent, though, didn't really feel like Clark Kent to me.
Okay.
Which is important, because you're playing two characters. When you're playing Superman, you're playing two characters.
Dana Delaney in the Superman animated show, you know, in the Timverse, she was beating the shit out of Clark all the time with her one-liner. She was great. Lois Lane was a great character in that show.
Definitely.
This show, she's a little different. She can't really beat up on Clark. Because he's not around. Mm-hmm. He goes to Afghanistan mysteriously before Doomsday attacks.
Yeah, and Afghanistan, yeah, totally great way to work in the times.
Yeah, great. Uh-huh. Well, yeah, whether it's taking place now or in the 90s when the comics were written, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, because they were both relevant.
Yeah, so it's pretty good there.
Yeah.
But Lois, she had stuff to do in this, but she didn't have as much oomph to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, other than emoting or trying to be the detective and stuff.
Okay.
Another scene I liked with her was her and Lex, when she got Lex to open up the thing where she stabbed him or whatever with the needle. I kind of like that.
Okay.
So, I mean, I did like her. I can see what you're saying, that there wasn't enough oomph. I will agree that there are times where she did sound kind of flat, but I think she did a good job with what she was given.
Well, you know what it was, actually, that really kind of led to it to me? Was every time she was with Jimmy, it just didn't feel right. Jimmy was actually good. I do agree with what you said about Jimmy, that his character was actually very well voiced. Their back and forth just didn't feel right to me, because I'm so used to, even in the comic books, and, well, they try to do it here, is that Jimmy and Lois have this their own relationship going on, their friendship that is witty banter back and forth, kind of like Clark and Lois was in the animated series. But they always have that in the comics or in animated projects, and it just didn't feel right to me in this. I don't know really what I was expecting. I just expected her to be maybe more sarcastic,
mm-hmm.
and I just didn't get that. But
well, there's not much room to be sarcastic when Superman dies.
Obviously, but even before that with Jimmy, though.
Okay.
I mean, Jimmy was doing some really stupid stuff in this film.
Okay, know? Well, since we're talking about Jimmy, let's talk about... Well, do you want to talk about character models first?
Yeah, we can
redesigns.
Let's
do that before we do a story.
Okay, well, you know what? Actually, before we even do that, though, we're leaving out the most important character.
Oh, Lex, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, well, also, Perry was okay. I'll give Perry, you know, that much. He was all right. But, yeah, James Marsters is a very familiar voice as Lex Luthor. And I'm going to make a statement here, and you could either agree or disagree. I felt like he was playing Brainiac. And it might be the fact that he played Brainiac on the Smallville, but his voice, to me, is so much more suited for a Brainiac character than a Lex Luthor, because he actually sounded like Brainiac on the animated series to me.
Yeah, I will have to... Now that you say it, I can see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived with Clancy Brown for so long that he's just my Lex Luthor.
Sure.
I mean, even watching the new The Batman thing, like, the past 2 weeks, Clancy Brown is on there as Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you can't compete with that.
Yeah, I know.
And he did such a good job in the animated series.
Oh, I agree.
Him and Lois were the standout actors for me in that animated series.
Yeah, I mean, that's
Superman didn't really care less.
They were able to replace Superman's voice, and I was still okay.
Right.
You know, when they replaced him in Justice League, they got a guy who sounded enough like him where I was fine with that. But if you would have replaced Dana Delaney or Clancy Brown, it wouldn't have worked.
Lex Luthor here, though, I don't know if it was him or just, like, what he was given. He didn't really have much to do. He sat around brooding, basically.
Yeah.
It begins with, like, this great opening monologue about how sometimes gods must die. And then it ends with a closing monologue by Lex Luthor about how sometimes even gods can return from the dead. So, I mean, those are good opening monologues, but they just didn't sound... They sounded like Lex Luthor the way the words were. Like something you'd read out of a comic that he would say.
Mm-hmm.
But just the tone was too cold and almost too flat. To me, Lex Luthor has to be a little nutty. This guy didn't seem nutty. This Lex Luthor was like cold and calculating all the time.
Well,
he seemed more like a Batman villain who plans everything out.
See, you took the words out of my mouth there, because I was actually just going to say I liked the fact that he was cold and calculating. Because Lex Luthor, for me, in the comic books, most of the time, manages to be cold and calculating. Sure, he has his insane moments and his crazy moments.
Well, he's been crazy for like the past year or so, right?
Yeah, but before that.
And even in Superman Returns, he's a little crazy. I mean, come on, a land scheme again?
Yeah,
fucking A.
I know.
Man, I wish Raph were here to defend that.
Well, hey, at least he brought the Injustice League back. And that's not much of a spoiler, because that's what's going on right now in Justice League. At least that's back. That's sort of happy. And I love the fact that they're called Injustice League Unlimited.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But he does have his crazy, silly moments, but he has those cold, dead moments almost. Like, you feel like this is a guy whose soul was lost a long time ago. That's the part of Lex Luthor James Marsters was able to capture. So even though I felt his voice was more suited for Brainiac, he did add some things to the character that made him different enough than Clancy Brown's character to maybe distinguish between the two. that might have been a reason why I didn't like Lois nearly as much, because she didn't bring enough to the table to make her different than Dana Delaney. It just felt like she was trying to be the same character. I wanted a bit of a different thing going on here, because she was different in Superman Doomsday, but not, I don't know, like they didn't make her different enough. Lex Luthor was different enough here.
That makes sense, because Lex Luthor pretty much in this movie was cold and calculating.
Yeah.
I mean, he sits there for half the movie and sits behind his desk until the clone Superman comes.
Yeah.
And basically beats the tar out of him. But then he gets shot with a needle by Lois.
Yeah.
Not very Lex Luthor-like.
Well,
when he kills Percy for no apparent reason. No, that I did not understand.
That was stupid. That was stupid because right away, and again, time for fanboy rant, all right? You do not fucking kill Mercy.
Well, it was like, oh, Lex Luthor hasn't done anything evil for 40 minutes. Ah, Mercy, you know about the secret Doomsday.
And I didn't even know that was Mercy.
He said her name like once or twice.
Once or twice, sure. But the voice that they chose for that is a very familiar voice in animated features. It's Cree Summer. She's voiced characters on Rugrats. She's done a whole bunch of stuff all over the place. That's why I couldn't really buy her as Mercy, because Mercy has always been a bitch to me.
Well, it was a total departure. This was like some hot secretary.
Yeah.
It wasn't the psycho bitch karate driver.
She's supposed to be a bodyguard.
Exactly. She was not a bodyguard in this movie.
Because obviously she wasn't, because she was able to be killed by Lex Luthor, who was strong
like
as an
Lex
ant.
Lex Luthor's secretary fuck toy.
Ooh. And
that's
and
what
sad,
she looks like.
Sad but true, dude. Sad but true. I don't know why they went that route, because in Superman Doomsday she wasn't like that. If I remember correctly, she was actually in the original Superman Doomsday, right? I mean, she was in Death of Superman.
Let's clarify here, because Superman Doomsday is a thick trade about Doomsday's origin and the Doomsday Wars and shit.
When I've accidentally said Superman Doomsday on this show, I've meant Death of Superman, because Superman Doomsday was back when he still had the mullet. So that was actually after he had already returned. But yeah, if I remember correctly, she was in Death of Superman. That was also when Lex Luthor was masquerading as his son.
Oh, is that what happened? I thought it was a clone.
It was, at first, he was masquerading as a son, to the public. As a son. People knew in the background that he was actually a clone. But because he had red hair and a beard...
Wait, is he a clone or is he masquerading as a son?
He was masquerading as a son, but people behind the scenes knew he was a clone. That's the way it went.
I hadn't read anything. I jumped right into there with Death of Superman and Return. And it read to me like it was a clone of Lex Luthor who took the identity of a long-lost son.
I'm gonna look that up right now. One second.
So yeah, they totally threw that out in this movie, which kind of makes me glad.
Yeah.
Because that was really confusing just to read that on a lark, you know, in the middle of the 40 comics or whatever that whole saga is. Mm-hmm. Death to Return.
Okay. All right, here we go. The clone actually had Lex Luthor's brain. So this was our Lex Luthor. It was a cloned body. He then masqueraded as his illegitimate son and heir, Lex Luthor II.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. What are you going to do? Yeah, he transplanted his brain into a clone of himself, which he passed off as his hitherto unknown illegitimate son and heir, Lex Luthor II.
Ah, oh, convenient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was then that character until his hair started falling out, and then he revealed himself as actually Lex.
Ha-ha!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there you go. But yeah, anyway, going back, I think there was a Mercy then. This is back when also Lex Luthor had an unhealthy relationship with Supergirl.
Yeah, Matrix Supergirl.
Yeah, Matrix Supergirl. They had a whole thing going for a while, and that's why I'm not quite sure if Mercy was around. I think she was, but the point is Mercy, I've always known her to be a bodyguard, and this one she was a secretary, it didn't really work. But
since we're talking about Lex, let's talk about character designs. What did you think?
I liked it. I liked the character design on Lex. I felt that it was, I don't know, it gave him more of that angry businessman feel, which was okay for me, because In the animated series and in JLU, he felt like a guy who could actually hold up in a fight.
Lex Luthor here is like a whole lot skinnier.
Sure, yeah. Which is the thing, you know, when you're a guy on Wall Street, you don't always have time to work out. So this one, to me, felt more like the angry, evil businessman type. It worked for this here. I wouldn't want to see that on a regular basis, but it was a nice change here. I've already made my statements about Superman's design. Take off those few marks on his chin, and he would have been fine for me.
Well, if they took those few marks off on his chin, he would have looked exactly like he did in the animated shows.
Yeah, but
how, I think is why they're different.
But how else do you draw Superman?
With the Bruce Timm style?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Add more funky lines. Maybe it was to distinguish him, make him look older.
Maybe, but
to make this an older Superman.
Well, think about it this way. The reason why Batman had a redesign when Bruce Timm was doing it was because he was forced to use a specific style the first time around. He was forced by the animation company to make it look more like the movies. When he had a chance to break off and recreate the characters, he made it look the way he did. And that was fine. The Superman that he did, he never had to worry about that, so that was the way he wanted his Superman to look. So there really was no reason to change it. This was his Superman.
Well, I like the original Batman design better than the Reed one.
The one
in Gotham Knights to the one in Justice League.
Okay.
I think his ears are way too fucking long. He's not a Kelly Jones Batman.
I like the one in JLU. I don't like the one in Justice League. In JLU, they made a few changes. They made his ears smaller. They definitely did make them smaller, and there were times because he was colored blue as opposed to gray in JLU, there were times when he closed his eyes and they zoomed in on his face that looked just like the original design for Batman, which I was certainly okay with. It was a nice combination of the two for me. With this one, though, I didn't see any reason to redesign Superman. Unless you're going to do something like a New Frontier where there's obviously a reason to, it's the same dude.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Clark, though.
Okay.
Clark, I think, had the most drastic redesign for the one scene that he's in as Clark. You know, in Superman the Animated Series, he's always wearing a suit. That's how you tell Clark. Yep. I mean, pretty much, that's with any of those animated shows. If they're the alter ego, they're wearing the same outfit.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a special occasion. Bruce Wayne always wore in the first three volumes or whatever, it's like the brown suit, which is ugly.
Yeah.
And then the fourth volume, he's wearing the black with the red tie. Mm-hmm. Clark Kent always had the blue suit on. Basically. Mm-hmm. Here, when he shows up, and his hair was combed back and was real slick looking, really nerdy. Clark Kent here is in a black t-shirt, brown leather jacket, and he's having like the 2000s pop star hair where they cut it real short, and instead of spiking it or actually doing anything with it, they put gel on it and go, mess their hands around, and then take their hands out. And they're like, done, a masterpiece. That's hairstyling. So yeah, Clark is... He has the badass hairstyle. You know, he's hip. He's happening. He's hip.
Hey.
He's Clark Kent.
Ooh.
He's not a nerd.
Right. We know he's secretly a nerd.
Right.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Clark?
One of the reasons why I liked it was the same reason why I liked the Lex Luthor. It was different enough for me. This one was okay for me. Superman's look is timeless. It's hard to really change it that much. That's why I guess they figured, hey, let's put some lines on his cheeks and that's it. The Clark Kent look, he's had a lot of different looks over the years. During the time that the original Death of Superman came out, this is pretty much what he looked like.
Yeah, so I was going to say that too.
I'm perfectly okay with that.
So yeah, that was fine. It's just you're comparing it to the Tim style the whole time you're watching it. You're going to notice things.
At this point, we're joined by John Mayo, who hasn't been on for a while, so I figured I'd get him in on this. John, what's up?
Oh, not too much.
Surviving ever so slightly, but he is still there. That's what's important. we were talking about character designs, and I'm curious to see your take on that, as obviously you saw it when I did at San Diego. What did you think about the redesign for Clark and for Lex, as those are the two that we've touched on so far?
Overall, I thought they were not bad. There was some stuff with like the way they did the jaw or the cheekbone lines or something that just seemed like they were scarred or something versus anything. Lex seemed a little, you know, thinner, whatever. It seemed to be, I almost would say, a minor downgrade in the quality versus any major redesign by and large.
Okay.
But, I mean, nothing too bad. There was the one or two things that just didn't work for me, like I said, with the cheekbones and that kind of a look. But, it was good.
Well, what I was saying earlier about Lex Luthor is that he felt more like an angry businessman in this and less like a guy who could beat you up.
He seemed really, kind of skinny, almost frail in that respect. More from the Smallville school of thought with the physicality of that Lex than some of the bigger, beefier ones we've seen in the animated series.
And I'm actually glad you brought that up because I hadn't actually have drawn that comparison until just now. Brent, you think it looks a little bit like the Smallville Lex?
Definitely. I definitely think so, since Michael Rosenbaum's so tall and thin. Mm-hmm. It's basically he got those Lex Luthor cheekbones. And John, earlier we said that the those cheekbone lines or whatever on Clark and Superman were the more of a Dan Jurgens look that they promised us.
Oh, is that what that was? Good Lord, I hate the Bill Sienkiewicz look.
Well, what John and I had theorized when we were watching it is that one of the animators just happened to like spill some ink, and they kept it.
How do you get it so precise, though?
Well, yeah. You see, it was such a fluke. It was such a fluke that it happened to fall at just the right point.
Or maybe he's had super Kryptonian cheek lifts or something.
I mean, yeah. I'm not going to say that animating a series is easy or that I could do anything resembling a better job than a stick figure sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like there's some almost fundamental aspect of how you draw an animated character that whoever was either the lead artist or the lead something or whatever just got wrong. You know what I mean? There's got to be a right way to do those cheekbone kind of effects or whatever, and the wrong way that they chose.
Well, do you feel that it was just trying too hard to look different than he did in the animated series? Because what we were saying is that the Bruce Timm look is so iconic, and this was done by Bruce Timm. So do you think Bruce Timm was possibly trying too hard to not look like himself?
No. I think if that were the case, we would have got something that would have actually looked as if it were a different style.
Okay.
It's funny because it was very clearly a Bruce Timm-ish animated look in many respects with different character models but still the same overall style. And as a result, I felt the film kind of had a severe identity crisis, if you'll pardon the phrase, because it was caught somewhere between the Bruce Timm animated series that we all know and love, Smallville. I think there were some aspects even of the Christopher Reeve Superman type stuff. Certainly the comics had a bit of an influence, and I would say the current Batman, the Batman series I should say, mm-hmm. had some influence. And it was kind of a gestalt of all of that, and a few things just didn't meld in the process.
I want to thank you for using the word gestalt, because I feel that's not used nearly enough on podcasts.
You're welcome.
Probably not.
Comic timing. We're full of gestalt. All right, let's move on to Lois. Her character design, probably pretty similar to the way it was in the animated series. But there were some slight tweaks, I guess. We'll go through the rest of the main cast, like I guess the main Superman cast here. Specifically Jimmy, Lois, Martha, and Perry. Because they're sort of grouped together, and then we'll go into the last villain, which would be Toyman. And, yeah, any major differences you notice, Brent?
Hair length. And other than that, not really.
Pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Mercy, obviously, were major differences, but we've talked about her, and I don't want to talk about that more. It angered me greatly. Brr. John, it looked pretty much the same to you, right?
Yeah. And it's funny, because I've seen the first part of the Superman episode of The Batman. Mm-hmm. And that's really had me kind of rethinking some of the decisions they made on the Superman Doomsday film, because the Batman is not the Bruce Timm universe. It's supposed to be this new universe. Mm-hmm. And they use essentially the Bruce Timm Superman.
Yeah.
George Newbern does the voice. You've got the same Lois. Everything else is more or less the same.
Clancy Brown is Lex Luthor again.
Yeah. I mean, we're back to the, I don't want to say the glory days of the animated universe or whatever, but it was fun. It was comfortable. So the changes they made, which in a lot of cases, like in the character designs, were fairly subtle, same art style, but a few different, you know, a little taller, a little thinner, a few minor tweaks like that. Moreover, with the voices, which I thought were radical departures, not bad choices, but not the voices I would have expected either before or since, it seemed like they were trying to be different for the sake of being different versus leveraging creative assets and voice actors and things like that that they already had and going with that.
Well, what I'm really looking forward to is whether or not Chris Hardwick from Singled Out does a good job as Green Arrow next week on The Batman.
Should be interesting to find out.
Oh, no.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, you didn't know that, Brent?
No.
They should have taken the guy who did it on Smallville.
Oh, God. Justin Hartley. He's pretty good.
Hey, well, look. Still, Chris Hardwick, all right? The only thing I know him from is Singled Out in that, like, dating show that took place on a boat. That's his background. I don't really see him having much of a background in, like, voice acting or anything, so I'm kind of scared about that.
Backgrounds are overrated.
I guess.
Erica Durant, who plays Lois on Smallville, I believe the only thing she had really done prior to Smallville was an episode of Stargate SG-1.
Oh.
No, House of the Dead.
Okay, I sit corrected. The only thing I knew her from, though, was...
All right.
And really, that's all that matters. What do I know?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, she's gone on to do a great job there. And I think she could do a good job as a voice actor, too. I mean, certainly Michael Rosenbaum has done plenty of voice acting.
Oh, sure.
It all comes down to whether they've got the background or not. There are some people who are just a lot better at it than others.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one difference in character animation that we really had was Toyman. He looked a lot more like his actual DC Comics self here, and less like he did, obviously, a hell of a lot less than he looked like in the animated series, because in that one, he was a living toy. In this one, he was a moldy old man who looked like he might have had Cheetos under his breath.
Was he moldy? I thought he was your stereotypical comic book fan. I thought it was a dig at us. The fat slob who needs a shave and doesn't brush his teeth and wears black t-shirt.
Hey, I totally brushed my teeth this morning. Everything else is true.
And doesn't wash. That's what he looked like to me. He looked like the stereotypical comic guy, what mainstream America thinks we are.
The Toyman's had a couple of different looks in the comics and stuff, too. So that's a character that I really don't think there's a classic, de facto one look for. I think there's like two or three to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Chucky look myself.
Yeah, I like that as well. I mean, this guy, I guess he did look like the pathetic loser villain. Now that you mentioned it, Brent, I'm probably not going to be able to take the fact that he probably goes to his comic shop every single week out of my head. But, yeah, he looked villainous enough for me, I guess. He did the job. But, yeah, we can move on to the actual story, I guess, here. And, well, John made the comment that there might not have been any story to this in the first place. There was story to this. It just wasn't what we were expecting from a Superman death story, as it were. Because, well, this wasn't Death of Superman. This was an entirely new Vision. Did the Vision work for you, Brent?
The first half of it.
Okay, but not the second
half? I mean, I liked what came out of the second half, but I really wanted a Return of Superman second half with the Eradicator and Cyborg Superman and all that stuff. When they said that they're taking a departure from it, I just went, oh, that went out the window. Just forget about any of it. Because, honestly, in, you know, the 70 minutes that they were basically just an hour and 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
70 minutes that this was, you can't have those things in it.
Yeah. Well, they hadn't really told us, though, going into this, that we were getting a major revision of the story. You know, they kept saying Superman Doomsday, Superman Doomsday, Death of Superman, Superman Doomsday. And that's all associated with the reign of the Superman. So I thought that they would at least find some way to work that in. Instead, we got Reign of the Superman clone.
Well, we got the solar suit, the black suit.
Yeah, but that's it.
And a mullet.
Well, part of it is this whole string of direct-to-DVD features I thought was originally sold, or marketed, I should say, to the fan base as... They're going to take some of their classic and some of their really loved storylines, like New Frontiers, like the Judas Contract, like the Superman Doomsday stuff, and do a reasonably faithful adaptation into an animated feature. And that they were going to try to do some a little higher production values than an average cartoon, stuff like that. But they were going to be faithful artistically and story-wise to the source material. And while this certainly leaned heavily on the source material, there came that one point in the movie where there was a significant divergence. Now, there almost had to be because you don't have – even if they'd gone more than the 70 minutes, if they'd gone 2 hours or even 2.5, and there was no way they were going to. But even if they had, you can't bring in Green Lantern and do that whole Coast City storyline. You can't bring in – you know, the four other Superman clones and get any kind of halfway decent storyline with them in the amount of time you'd have available. So they had to make changes, and I understand that intellectually, and I think the story they told was entertaining. It was not the story I had expected to be watching when I watched it.
They needed a different title for the story that they told.
I don't think
Superman
it's the title.
Doomsday, he disappeared after the first 20 minutes.
It was the way they marketed it, though. I expected a more faithful adaptation.
Yeah. Well, when somebody says the words Superman Doomsday to me, I think Death of Superman. I don't think it's going to be about just Superman Doomsday, because that would be a trilogy, pretty much. You'd have to have Superman Doomsday in the first movie, then Reign of the Superman, and then Return of the Superman.
What about Hunter Prey or the other Superman Doomsday miniseries they had?
I thought it was going to be, like John was saying, you know, there's this trade that says Superman Doomsday has the Doomsday Wars and Hunter Prey in it. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, okay, maybe they'll do the first story where Superman or Doomsday gets whoever kills Superman, right? And then they go on to do, like, the origin story where you find out he's, like, some Krypton experiment or whatever the hell he is or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Superman gets that cool outfit with the pouches and stuff.
Yeah.
Cool being relative, you know. Well, so I thought they'd do something more like that.
I never really thought that at first. I maybe thought it for maybe, like, 5 minutes after the fact. But once I started seeing the promo art, it was clear that this was going to be that. But I don't know. I mean, they could have gone a very different route here. Like John said previously, like we said previously, if this was supposed to be one of those things that's supposed to please the fans, they didn't hit the mark.
Well, it's not just is it supposed to please the fans. I would hope that's always their goal. But again, they said it was going to be a faithful adaptation of the source material.
Yeah.
And if they had been upfront saying, as faithful as possible, once we remove the Justice League, Green Lantern, all these other extraneous characters, like, the clone Superman, the Superboy, the Kryptonian, the Eradicator, you know, all that stuff.
And Steel.
Yeah, and Supergirl, and, you know, a few other things, you know.
Red-haired Lex Luthor. Yeah, it's faithful.
Details. But if they'd at least said, you know, there's a lot of things that we're not going to have time and space to do in the allotted parameters of this film, but we're going to try to stay as true to the core story,
yeah,
I'd have been okay with that.
Or a better sentence would have been, we're going to be faithful to the core story and the characters and the themes after this movie comes out, starting with New Frontier, hopefully.
Well, I got to say, I'm a little curious as to how they're going to do the Judas contract to the new Teen Titans, because they're not going to have Jericho. That was half the reason I was looking forward to it.
I agree. Now,
I understand why they're not going to have Jericho. You can't tell a movie-length storyline and in the final segment of it introduce a new character who essentially comes and saves the day. It's bad storyline for a story. For the ongoing Titans story, it worked beautifully. That's the difference in the format and the venue.
I think they'll be able to do a decent job with it without Jericho. It's just going to be a different story. They're going to have to make some changes to make it fit, but the basic gist of the story is going to be the same. Just like with this one, the basic gist was the same for the first half, not for the second half. They just shouldn't have built it as faithful.
The change here is the last quarter of the Titans thing is going to change, and it essentially means Nightwing's got to kick a lot more butt because he's got nobody there to help him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, because Nightwing kicking butt is good, just as long as he doesn't have sex with somebody halfway through.
What are you referring to there?
Dude, he's had sex with every woman in the DCU. Come on, man. Come on.
You almost slipped up and said Marvel.
Yeah, I know. Well, he might have, for all we know. Do you feel the story itself was rushed, like they weren't meeting deadlines and possibly had to just throw something together? Because the second half of the movie almost felt a bit tacked on to me. Like they were going one route and then just shifted immediately after the death of Doomsday. It might have been because I was expecting one thing and not the other, but it felt a bit forced to me. Did it feel forced to you, John?
There's forced and there's rushed. I don't think it was rushed. It did feel a little forced, but I think part of that, again, is you have to rewrite so much of it when you pull out so many of the core aspects of the story.
Mm-hmm.
They did a good job rebuilding the story with all that stuff removed, and it was still very satisfying, very good, but again, very different. This goes back to my comment about, you know, expectations going in. If I had not been expecting something to be a very faithful adaptation and something that started out as a reasonably faithful adaptation, but then hit that halfway point where suddenly that was not viable anymore because of the number of characters, because of, you know, whatever reasons they chose to go the way they chose, I think that most hardcore fans of the story are going to hit that one point in the story where suddenly it's like, okay, you lost me because this isn't the story I thought I was going to be watching. That's the big hurdle for this. I think it'll be less of an issue for New Frontier. On the other ones going forward, I'm not sure what they've got planned besides that and Judas Contract off the top of my head. I mean, part of it is the nature of comics in a shared universe. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to just pull in these other characters, use them for bits and pieces of story.
Sure.
Yet when you want to tell a Superman story and Superman needs to be the lead character and the hero, mm-hmm. it's a little more difficult.
Well, I still say that they could have very well had, at least at the funeral, the Justice League there. You know, they could have had characters that were involved with the first one. Have, like, the Justice League of that time be there and a couple of other characters, and that would have been perfectly fine. They just didn't. And I understand it's to tell a Superman story, but it kind of felt like, to me, that this is a universe where only Superman exists as a hero. Obviously, the other heroes would show up if he died.
Well, it's funny because I would say that potentially an equally faithful adaptation of this storyline was told in Justice League, the cartoon series, mm-hmm. when they had Superman apparently die and meet up with, I guess, Vandal Savage in the future. Mm-hmm. They had Doomsday in that. They had the Justice League fight him. They had a bunch of that other stuff. Yeah. They took some definite departures there, too, but they would have been better served if the first movie of these they had done was something that was naturally self-contained.
Like possibly like New Frontier. Yeah. Yeah, New Frontier should have been the first movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that's definitely the case. Well, Brent, what's your opinion on the whole thing? Rush, tacked on, other Dennis, what?
I don't want to say rushed because it felt as fleshed out as it could have been. I don't want to say tacked on because it certainly wasn't rushed. I just want to say it felt stock. Like, oh, well, we can't have a mechanical Superman in a suit, and we can't have a cyborg Superman, and we can't have a super... But we can have a clone. Mm-hmm. Oh, they had two clones in the original? Oh. Well, what about if we just have one clone? Like Superman 3? Or Superman 4? Well, he wasn't really a clone, but he had the same shit, right?
Close enough.
So, close enough, right? That's what I kind of got at the end of this movie. With Superman 3, Superman 4, but a lot less evil.
So you kind of felt it was like uninspired?
Yeah, it really felt uninspired. They could have come up with something different, I thought. But that's maybe fair. They did the clone thing to kind of echo the two clones that they had. And I'm talking about the Eradicator and Superboy here. You know, kind of echo what they had in the original story.
You know, now that John mentioned it, and now that you mentioned it as well, Brent, I kind of feel like that Justice League episode was more of a Death of Superman story than this one was. And that this one was much more of, say, a retelling of Superman 3 than Superman Doomsday. You could have even set this in a Superman Returns universe if you wanted to, and just had this have been the remake of Superman 3, just like Superman Returns is like a Superman 2.5, that sort of thing. You know, just have that be there, and that would have even worked for me.
Well, I think it'd be interesting if some fan were to take that two-part Justice League episode and the Superman Doomsday and edit them together, because we might have enough pieces to actually get, you know, something close to what we want.
You know, oddly enough, that sounds like a project that needs to be done. There's got to be at least one fan out there with editing software that has already thought to himself, let's get this done. If not, the CGS universe is a very, very big universe, okay? Anybody who's listening to this right now who feels inspired, the chore is yours. Go out there and do it. I want to see the JLU episode combined with this one to make a proper Death of Superman story. Just go out there and do it. Add some lines onto his chin if you have to, or delete the other lines. do whatever the hell you have to do. Just combine the two, and we'll get an interesting story out of it.
Okay, John, what did you think about the beginning with the introduction of Doomsday? What about that? Do you have any particular feelings on that?
There were, again, some departures from how the comics did. Again, they didn't have time to be doing a few issue build up, you know, as a subplot from other stories, whatever. So, you know, I got they had to change a few things. I didn't have any major problems with it, but it seemed like something that could have been more faithfully adapted without really hurting the story any. In other words, I don't think they needed to have made all the changes they made.
Well, I thought they could have used a couple comic book references, like, you know, the big panels that they had at the end of every issue, the fist punching the wall, the thoom, thoom, thoom. Mm-hmm. One or two of those would have made it more faithful in maybe our eyes, or just maybe give us a little bit of happiness. I was missing that, particularly. And the rest of it where it was, he was just some alien from another planet. They used Earth as his toilet. Was kind of what you said. They didn't have enough time to build up his true origin, but I guess it was better than them just having him appear like they did in the comics.
Yeah, but it could have been a really cool opening to have Clark going about doing his usual daily life type stuff, intercut with the thoom kind of a thing as they show the credits or whatever, and kind of give the build up immediately of he thinks it's going to be a normal day. He's Superman. It's not. At that point in the story, I had more problems with the cheekbones than more or less any story changes they'd made.
In here, they have Superman and Lois Lane kind of, I guess, pseudo-sleeping together. I don't know. I think they kind of added it in or tacked it on to make it feel a little more adult than like the regular animated series. I didn't think they needed it in the story at all.
They didn't need it in the story. That was strictly a, see, we're not just a kid's cartoon. It was, I don't want to say gratuitous, it was needless. It didn't add to the story.
I think they could have gotten a little bit more edge if they'd added more. We were saying earlier before you showed up that it needed a little more violence. You know, they just had like a couple things of blood to show us that they could do it. But I still felt that they were pulling punches in some of the fights, you know. When Lex Luthor was beating up Superman, they had the black silhouettes, just like they had in JLU and Batman all the time. Superman, in the Superman Doomsday fight, we certainly saw a lot of hits, but, you know, we had to in that fight. But it felt like at other times, they didn't want to show the violence. So it seemed like it, as a trade-off for that, they added the sex storyline, which they didn't imperatively say that they had sex. They just kind of implied it with the robes and stuff.
I think part of it was, again, kind of the identity crisis it was having. They weren't really sure how far they could or should go in various areas. And I can understand that confusion. It's direct to DVD. It's kind of a cartoon. It's kind of an animated feature. It's kind of for the collector and hardcore fan audience, but obviously for the mainstream as well. I really don't know where they should have drawn the line on certain aspects, on the violence, on the you know, the bedroom scene, that sort of a thing. I can certainly understand the dilemma they were in. But, you know, they should have, before they started writing the script, and maybe they did, but they should have, you know, made it very clear, these are the parameters we're working in. We will allow this level of violence. And if this was supposed to be for a more mature audience, seeing Superman get a bit more banged and bruised would not have been a problem. And I agree, they did almost literally pull punches in that area. Now, I don't think we should have seen, you know, gore and blood flying all over the place or stuff like that. And they did seem to hold back more than I was expecting.
I would say they need more gore, but I mean, at the end when Lois is holding Superman in that iconic image, she's not – I mean, Superman's costume is not cut at all. It looks like he didn't get beat up that much.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I don't want the gore, but it didn't look like he really got that badly hurt.
Yeah, I think he needed, like, you know, a shredded costume, you know, kind of like what he had in the comics. You could maybe he didn't have to have all the blood that he had in the comics, because in the comics he really looked like he got the life beat out of him. But in the movie, it didn't feel like that. If you had to pick a favorite scene, what do you think was your favorite?
Wow, that's tough. I would probably go with the one where Luthor goes into the room, beats up Superman, and it gets revealed that it's a clone. That, I thought, was a fairly effective scene and just a fun scene. Certainly the one that kind of sticks out in my mind is the most memorable.
I think the military scenes were probably my favorite. I thought those were pretty well animated and plotted out and stuff. I really liked those. But I did really like the Lois scene with Ma Kent, where she confronted her and said, "I know who Superman is."
Yeah,
I really liked that. I really liked Anne Heche's acting there. So that was probably my favorite scene. Did you like that as well? Or?
Yeah, that's one of the other ones that kind of sticks out in my memory. Because, again, it's been, you know, a couple of months since I've seen it.
Oh, so, Ian, what was your favorite scene in the whole movie, if you had to pick one?
You know, actually, one of my favorite scenes in the movie would have to be the death scene. I actually felt that scene in itself was done very well and actually echoed the original work a lot. You know, that was one that's, it's a very iconic shot in the actual comic book. seeing him lying there all tattered, tape, you know, the cape is tattered with his, like, hand up and Lois crying. This wasn't that, but it was a good, I guess a good alternative. And it felt true enough to make me happy. That's definitely one of them.
We were just saying that we didn't feel in, like, especially in that part where that Superman had gotten the life beat out of him. Mm-hmm. Certainly his costume was still all in one piece except for his cape.
Yeah. Yeah, they could have ripped him up a little bit more, but the fighting itself did feel severe enough for me. I mean, we were talking about earlier that there could have been actual more blood and stuff, but the punches seemed hard enough for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just they didn't seem to leave any marks.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. What leaves a mark on Superman? We still have to ask that. Even though in the comic books he gets hurt all the time, it doesn't really happen that much in the cartoon, from what I remember.
I want to ask why Doomsday didn't get a redesign. Because he looks pretty much the same from what he did in the JLU cartoon, which is already a departure from the comics.
Yeah, you think it's like a departure from the comics?
Well, I mean, in the comics he's a lot more bony. Here, he has the bone shoulder blades or shoulder pads or whatever. Uh-huh. And he's got a lot more teeth and stuff. And I don't know. I would have liked to have seen something more to the comics. I think he looks more fierce with all the bones and stuff.
Well, don't you think this might be like the same reason why they didn't give Black Canary her leggings, that it would have been too hard to animate?
I don't know. I think you could have done it.
John, obviously you don't have a animation background, but do you think that would be harder?
I've been Disney for – no, yeah, I've got no background in this. Jeez. Certainly they've got to simplify the costumes. They've got to take into account that they've got to be drawing, 24 or 30 frames a second or whatever it is. And sure, they can use computers to help out with some of that, but there still comes a point where somebody's got to draw a ton of images.
Sure.
In the comics, Doomsday had all the bone fragment stuff. You beat him up, he'd get a few more, whatever. That is a lot of detail and things like that to keep consistent, to draw from various angles, to draw from various angles as the guy turns. So certainly simplifying that is almost mandatory. And I didn't really have any problem with that because I expect a certain level of simplification of the costume for the drawing efficiency as long as it looks good and harkens back to the source material. And I thought Doomsday was fine for that.
Sure, yeah. He did enough for me. You know, he still had that menacing feel to him. He didn't just feel like a tall guy with bones. You know, he felt like a guy who could still beat somebody up and do it well enough.
But although that would be funny to see an animated feature where the bad guy basically looks like a guy in a rubber suit.
Yeah, sort of like the Godzilla treatment.
Yeah, yeah. That would be funny.
That would be awesome. Actually, was his – I forget. Was his background different in the actual animated than it was in the cartoon? I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. In the comic, it was actually a different background?
In the comic, he was a weapon essentially designed that kind of went out of control, and they basically, put him on this barren rock where he wouldn't bother anybody. Of course, that happened to later be Earth, but details.
Sure.
And in this he's also like derived from some Kryptonian or something. Wasn't it like the Kryptonians' fault, or they were trying to clone Superman and it came out as Doomsday? I forget exactly what it was, but
I don't remember if he was developed by the Kryptonians as a weapon or if it was just in their area and they stopped him, or I forget the details. It's been ages since I've read that comic.
It certainly did have something to do with the Kryptonians. I do remember that. That's why he was able to hurt Superman so much.
Yeah. But a lot of that was retconned in. When he first showed up, he was buried, he escaped, he was strong. That's all we knew about him.
Yeah, because wasn't he originally found by like the Metropolis sewer mutants or whatever the hell they were? Like sort of
no,
because like,
he walked halfway across the country.
Oh,
whatever.
Because
he was going through the Justice League and half a dozen other people at that point.
Okay, then what am I thinking of then? Because I remember him like running into like these mutants in a sewer at one point. I could be thinking of...
You're thinking of Supergirl going into like Cadmus' labs after Superman died.
Oh.
But they're trying to find the body after it's been stolen.
Okay, all right. So I'm thinking of the return and not the death.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Never mind then. But he didn't really rampage nearly as much in this one either.
No.
Yeah, he
killed a deer.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because that
and he threw that guy into his house. That's the same. Just one guy though.
Well, what's more hard to do, kill a deer or kill a guy?
Well, it depends on the deer. Pasture.
Yeah, it depends on whether it was a doe or a deer. A female deer.
Right? I saw horns, so it was a male deer.
Yeah, it was definitely a male. Well, I don't know. I mean, just there's something about Doomsday that always has to be like this, like, hulking, unstoppable machine. While they got aspects of that in this, they didn't get the full aspects. Like, he actually felt a little bit like a Wild Hulk to me the first time I read Death of Superman. Like, this could happen if the Hulk went rampaging.
And oh, yeah, totally. If the Hulk had been shot into space, somebody blew up the planet he you know, settled on and gotten married on, and he came back and he was ticked. I totally see that.
Gee, that sounds familiar.
And then there could have been a World War Doomsday.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
And then he fights and then he fights everybody on Earth until he can't find anybody else, and then Superman comes. Yeah, that sounds like the Hulk Sentry comes. Sentry.
But you've got to have Sentry standing in a doorway for at least a half hour.
Oh, right. Superman didn't do that in this, so yeah.
Although
a little different, different.
Oddly enough, that what you were describing until the doorway was pretty much Doomsday. Him getting through every other person until finally getting the Superman.
Yeah. Well, and they did a decent job building up the Doomsday character in the DVD and stuff, but he'd never had the unstoppable plowing through everybody else aspect because there was nobody else for him to fight.
Yeah.
And if they had set this, and granted, because of the events they'd already done in Justice League Unlimited, they couldn't, but if they had set this in that universe and had some of these other characters to draw on, even if all they do is show up, get batted around, get, you know, toasted or, you know, rushed to the hospital, whatever, and without saying a word, hence not having to pay for voice actors, could have been done cheaply and effectively, that would have built up, oh gosh, he is unstoppable, we need Superman.
Yeah.
But, you know, as it was, Superman's the only game in town.
I forget, was there Star or Cadmus in this movie at all?
No.
Okay, yeah. That's something they could have put up as a roadblock. You know, possibly get either Star Labs people or Cadmus people, try to use some of their weapons to stop him, and then it doesn't work, and then he gets Superman.
Didn't they use the Special Crimes Unit or something, or am I thinking the comics?
No, they had the miners who dug him up. Basically, he rampaged on them, but they had no weapons.
Yeah,
and then he again, went and killed a deer, and killed a guy with a shotgun in the Hick Town somewhere, and then Superman.
Yeah. You know, again, just going from the Superman cartoon series, animated series, they could have brought in Dan Turpin and his crew and stuff. I mean, they should have had something to where there was something to really gauge just how dangerous Doomsday really was. And, you know, a deer, now if it had been a bear, totally different case. Well, then I would have.
Well, it made Metropolis look weak, because we know Metropolis from what I've read about Metropolis in the comic books. Metropolis has a really good police department with high technology.
Well, that was the Special Crimes Unit I was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't get any of that in this film. Metropolis just seemed like a town that happened to have a superhero.
But again, 70 minutes, you only have so much time.
Oh, I know.
And I think you're trying to tell too much story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you're right. Well, one of the other scenes that was awesome to me, the scene where the clone Superman takes his explosive device out of his head.
That was creepy. It reminded me a lot of Britney Spears shaving her head for some reason. I don't know why.
You know, it's funny, I hadn't made that connection.
Yeah, because Britney Spears shaved her head, obviously, to take out an implant that the record companies had put in there that if she puts out bad album, she explodes.
I'm sure she thought she had something in there.
But, I mean, she's got stuff to worry about. Have you heard her albums?
Oh. Hey, I heard one song and my ears bled afterwards. Yeah. Well, come on. How badass do you have to be to go into a barbershop and then proceed to do brain surgery on yourself?
Was it a barbershop or a beauty salon?
Beauty salon.
Because that's what I thought was just hilarious. Here are all these ladies, you know, getting their hair done or whatever, and here's this guy who's frying a hole into his head with his heat vision. You know,
he's got some really controlled heat vision. If he can make it not melt the mirror, but then bounce back hot enough to blast a hole in his skull.
I want to know how he can do that without either wincing or at least blinking. That's got a sting.
Well, yeah, blinking would not be a good idea.
Well, you see, this is obviously a universe where he has a couple of extra powers, where he has super negative nerve intensity, and his head is really, really strong, except for when a laser goes through it.
Maybe he's got, like, those alligator eyelids that are clear.
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that. he's not dense or retarded, though.
What I thought was kind of funny was the press conference after he killed Toy Man, and he was kind of like, I had to set an example, and they're like, well, you're not the law. And I kind of thought, I am the law, like RoboCop.
And the law is me.
Exactly.
I was going to say, I mean, there's a lesson to be learned here from that beauty shop scene, and that's if you're going to put a self-destruct thing in a Kryptonian's head, you've got to line it up to where it's kind of directly behind his eyes. Because then, you know, he shoots the heat vision forward, it'd have to go straight back to hit the thing, and it just wouldn't work, you know?
Well, what I would do is I would set up an elaborate mechanism where it's inside of a lead box, which has a little bit of kryptonite in it. So if he explodes it in his head, he'll melt the lead box, sure. But then he has kryptonite in his brain, and then he's screwed.
I would implant more than one. I mean, imagine if he looked with the X-ray vision and he sees like about, you know, 50 little dots or whatever. Yeah, it's got kind of a feel to it. You know, that would work.
And then he finds out.
Can I get a curtain?
And then he finds out he accidentally swallowed the bottle city of Kandor. And that's what those little dots are. All right.
Yeah. Don't mock the Kandor.
That's why you don't live in Kandor. Dude can accidentally mistake it for a freaking soda pop and then you're screwed.
It's more of like one of those big water jugs they bring for the water cooler.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Just never accidentally fill it with Poland Spring and then you're set. What'd you think of the clone? I mean, did you feel he was enough of a Superman to the extreme to work in the scenario that he set him up for? Brent?
I thought so. I was kind of not disappointed because he was a full Kryptonian clone. I thought it was going to be, you know, something that maybe Lex Luthor could control more. Other than the thing in his skull, like maybe he wasn't a full Kryptonian. And I was kind of amazed how Lex Luthor can just clone Superman out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, why hadn't he done this before type thing?
Yeah, well, I mean...
So I was surprised he wasn't like part human or part frog or whatever, and that he didn't like blow up into some giant monster at the end that Superman had to fight.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. How did he actually clone a full Kryptonian? I mean, all the times he's tried it in the comics and all the times he tried it on the animated series, you got a Bizarro.
Details.
All right. Fine. Well, I actually wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of human DNA in there, a la Superboy.
Yeah, but the question is whose? I mean, because we didn't see Cadmus, so it can't be that guy.
Well, it was later revealed, spoilers, that it was Lex Luthor's, you know, DNA and not anybody else's. So, for all we know, he could have put a little bit of his own in there.
Because he's done that to himself a few times.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Maybe
he wasn't a full Kryptonian. I mean, it's kind of hard to gauge him. Superman wasn't at full strength when he was fighting himself.
That's true. Yeah, it's like, it's funny. I didn't really notice these flaws until I actually started thinking about it now, about the whole Kryptonian thing, because they never really explained how he got through that. They couldn't, obviously, in an hour and a half, but it's one of those things that us comic nerd dorks will notice. But
I want to know how he cloned all those clones so fast. Because it looked like he had at least 15 full clones ready to go, and then a bunch of other fetuses. Like, Superman was dead for 17 days.
This was best explained in an episode of The Next Generation, where Picard kidnapped. He's lying on the bed. The light beam hits him from the head, scans down to the feet, and then another Picard is on the other bed. There are photocopying machines that can do this.
Did they use those in your office? Is that how you take a break?
Yeah. You just set how many clones you want, you know, you hit the thing, you wait a little bit, you know, they just come shooting out on the output, you know, it stacks up. You know,
oh, collates. My God. John, you never left work, did you?
No, John left work a long time ago. His clone never left work.
Ah, I understand how it works now. Another 3 a.m. day for the John clone, but regular John gets to go home and podcast. I see how it is.
That's how we get them out like clockwork.
Clones are disposable as far as I'm concerned.
Oh,
that's why clones are so annoyed, you know?
all I can think of is the Prestige right now. Oh, God. Am I the only one here who's seen the Prestige?
No, I've seen it.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
I was actually kind of thinking the Michael Keaton movie, Multiplicity.
Yeah.
Oh.
Where maybe since John never goes to work, he doesn't have to hear that clone complain all the time.
Never clone alone.
Because that's what Michael Keaton in that movie. He talked to the clone. Uh-huh. If he just left him alone, it would have been fine.
Leave the clone alone. Leave the clone alone. We are totally going off track here, but yeah.
Ian, I'm totally surprised your favorite part was not the Kevin Smith cameo.
Oh, yeah. My favorite part is definitely the Kevin Smith cameo that happened for 8 seconds, and I barely even noticed until I went on the IMDb and found Kevin Smith's name. Yeah. Yeah. Woo. Ugh. He has to be in everything, doesn't he?
I guess.
Yeah. We know he's a huge Superman fan who almost made a Superman movie, and that there was almost a mechanical spider in it. But, yeah, whatever. He made his guest appearance, and that's that.
Lame. In his own words.
Yeah, yeah. So, Lois obviously found out that there was a bit of a problem with this Superman pretty quickly, and yet nobody else noticed, not even Jimmy.
He killed.
Yeah.
Well, she noticed because he didn't kiss her on the mouth when he took her home, mm-hmm. and that he missed her home the first time, so it's like he didn't know where he lives, therefore he's never slept with her.
Yeah.
You see, this illustrates a part of the Lois and Superman love dynamic that they really don't take much advantage of in the comics, and that's that Superman can really never dump Lois, because if he does, she's going to convince the world he's gone evil.
Oh, so basically pulling the whole my super ex-girlfriend thing, only the other way around?
Exactly.
Ah, okay. I'm learning way too much about comics on this episode. Way too much.
She can blow up her own apartment, get the insurance money, and blame it on Superman.
Ooh.
Because she used to date him.
Or better yet, she finds somebody that she totally hates, throws him off of a cliff, and blames Superman.
Superman was jealous.
Yeah.
That's how she gets rid of her new boyfriends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're writing comics right now. That's it. Just get it done. Get it done. DC has learned a lesson here. That's how to do it. He's going to have one more day where he's going to have to decide whether or not he gets to save his mother, or whether or not he totally disavows any knowledge of Lois whatsoever and they're not married anymore. It's going to be great.
Speaking of Superman's parents, where's Pa Kent? Does he have to die in every Superman continuity?
Yes.
He's dead in the movies now. Mm-hmm. He's dead in Smallville, which angered me a lot.
He survived in Lois and Clark.
Yeah,
okay, he survived in Lois and Clark, and he's still alive in the current comics.
Yeah.
Until Jeff Johns decides to kill him with Richard Donner in a year.
No. They better not.
On the upside, that'll never come out.
No, it'll come out. It'll just come out in about 6 or 7 years.
Oh, that's what annuals are for anyways.
Sure, yeah.
Kurt Busiek will write the funeral story before he even gets killed in an issue of Action Comics, and that'll be 6 years prior.
Brilliant, brilliant. It writes itself. It makes money.
Because they'll get Alan Heinberg to edit the story.
All right.
And Jim Lee to draw it.
We have gone on such a tangent in a matter of like 15 minutes here. But yeah, no, that is a valid point, though, that he is dead like everywhere but current continuity. I like, actually, the fact that he has two parents. I've always liked that.
I liked it, too. I can kind of understand, though, why he's dead. Because if he's there, then Ma Kent... Ma sounds really like nothing. Ma Kent really has, like, she doesn't have to turn to Lois at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Lois really doesn't have a shoulder to cry on because Ma Kent's still feeling the way she is, but she's already done it all to her husband. So I can see kind of that, where it strengthens that moment for a little, but it still seemed kind of like, does it have to be this way?
Yeah.
To me, anyway.
Well, the Lois and Ma Kent, Martha Kent dynamic in this actually reminded me a lot of the way that they were in Lois and Clark, where they were able to be confidants for each other. Whenever anything happened with Clark, you know, obviously they had to turn to somebody, and that's what they were for each other. They were that rock. Which worked very, very well. I don't know whether or not you guys draw a comparison to that as well, but it did remind me a lot of that. And in the current comics as well, but that's the, I guess, the other media Superman that it reminded me of a bit. Well, okay, we did favorite scenes. We talked about the plot a little bit. I guess we'll go to the fight scene. You know, the fight scene between the two Supermen, because that's really all so we really need to do on here, I guess. Okay, the fight scene between Superman clone and regular Superman. Better fight than the Doomsday fight? Different fight than the Doomsday fight? Necessary fight? What do you draw conclusions from that?
I thought it was pretty much the same.
The same?
I mean, okay, here's my big gripe with it. Superman has grown his super mullet with his super Rogaine in his super tank, right? And Super Robot says, "Sir, you're not at your weakest thing, but it's a good thing I brought you this solar suit. Oh, okay, I'll wear it, and I'll recharge on the way there." But he fights clone Superman in the dark. Anybody want to explain that to me?
No, I don't.
Well, and the funny thing, they could have fixed that with a 5 or 10 second scene of him arcing up out of the atmosphere, doing the soak up the sunlight for a bit, do the nice kind of, you know, cool Christ shot of him pose. As he then plows down to go into fight.
Pretty much pulling a Birdman.
Or a similar scene to kind of what they did at one point in Superman Returns and stuff. Or in the original Batman movie where you see the Batplane kind of go up, hit the silhouette or whatever, and then come down, you know.
Well, still, I still would have thinking it was kind of silly. I mean, he is wearing a solar suit at night. He needed, like, a night suit.
But if he'd had the solar suit and the robot says, "Hey, you should charge up first," and he goes and does that, then you've got the, okay, he's gotten powered up. But it's night, so he can't go on all the time. You know, he's going to run out of steam, whatever, because he's not totally charged. You could have had that work for the drama, too.
I guess that does explain why he was still weak, though, because, well, it was night.
I just think that's so ridiculous.
I'm glad
they go to such lengths to point out that it's a solar suit, but it's at nighttime.
I'm totally glad we did this podcast. I actually find more flaws with this movie now that I'm hearing other people point out the flaws.
Well, and here's another thing that I have with the Superman fight versus Superman. It's in the city, and it's at night, whereas 40 minutes prior, we had the Superman Doomsday fight in the city and at night. And nothing's the same. They throw each other through buildings. Oh, they fly this time. That's a little different. Both of them fly, right? And they end up at the Superman Memorial. That's different, too. But other than that, I didn't really see much difference.
But we do still find redeeming qualities.
Oh, there was a difference. Okay, Superman Doomsday fight. Lois and Jimmy were in a helicopter, which my thing, he goes, "How do you know how to fly an helicopter?" "Oh, I'm an Air Force brat, remember?" An Air Force brat does not a pilot make. My dad's in the Air Force. I don't know how to fly a helicopter. I'm sorry.
Man, shouldn't she be an Army brat?
Whatever.
General.
So, and then, but in the Superman fight, they're not in a helicopter going to the battle. They're in a Jeep. That's the difference. Oh. I'm sorry.
And how does she know how to drive a Jeep?
I know. She's an Air Force brat.
Yeah, she's never driven a Jeep before in her life.
It seemed just so really repetitive and derivative. Couldn't they changed it to be during the day? Or had the Doomsday scene during the day, like it was in the comics?
Well, it was obviously a way to, you know, reuse animation.
But they didn't, though.
Yeah.
What did they? Maybe they reused backgrounds.
Well,
but
that's what I mean. That's what I mean. They probably reused background animation. They probably reused background animation. I mean, that's a way to save money. If this wasn't nearly as big budget as we think it was, then it's possible they might have just pulled that route.
Yeah, but if that's the case, they should have tried to leverage more of what they had from the cartoons.
Yeah.
Because the art style was very similar. This was not a classic Dan Jurgens-looking thing like we'd kind of been led to believe it might be. In other words, it looked – well, no, I was going to say it looked so much more like the animated universe that we've seen in the cartoons than anything we were seeing in the comics around that time. And that's fine. I got no problem with that. But why not just embrace that, leverage all the art assets you've got on that, use whatever footage you can art material and stuff on that. Hell, I'd even have used the same voice actors. I thought the ones they had were fine, were good, but no reason you couldn't have used the existing, you know, voice actors. that they've used before and since. I mean, it seems some of this was different for the sake of being different, and they could have potentially, and maybe not, maybe they wouldn't have saved any money if they'd gone with the existing model sheets and stuff like that. But, you know, I have to wonder.
I think that what they realized with this is that because it was a movie, they thought they had to get, like, familiar voice actors for certain things. But that's not the case. I mean, actual actors are not always the way to turn for animated features. I mean, there have been plenty of stinkers that came out that had, well, stars in it.
Dougal, that 3D animated movie with Jon Stewart in it.
Oh, yeah, the one that – well, no, Jon Stewart is a plague for movies.
Fantastic.
No, Jon Stewart is a plague for movies. All right? he has said so over and over again. Every single movie he is in flops.
Oh, Big Daddy.
Yeah.
He's in Big Daddy.
That's one. Everything else, man. Everything else absolutely flops. Will Smith in Sharks.
Yeah, Shark Tale.
Yeah, Shark Tale or whatever it was. That was absolutely terrible. With this here, they believe the hype that in order to have a big production, you got to go with big names.
Well, I think they'd be better off if they would just acknowledge that there is a generation of fans or whatever that's grown up with, you know, George Newbern as Superman, Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor's voice, you know, that kind of stuff. And just like, you know, there are people who, when they hear Batman, are either going to hear Adam West or Kevin Conroy or Conway, who was the one who did it for the animated series.
Kevin Conroy, you got it.
Yeah. Go with that. I mean, the fact that they've essentially reverted back to those voice actors in the new Batman cartoon, it's like, there's no reason they couldn't have done that for the animated Superman Doomsday DVD.
Yeah, obviously they're looking to repeat doing those parts if they did it in a series totally unrelated to the old one.
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, they've said so on the Batman. It's like, well, why'd you go with them? It's like, well, they were there already, and they did a good job, so why not go with them again?
Mm-hmm. And I had no problem with the job that Adam Baldwin did and James Marsden and stuff. They were good. They were fine. But I spent enough of the time in the movie getting used to the essentially needless changes, both in the voices and the looks. And add to that the sometimes jarring changes they made to the story. It would have been more comfortable for me as an existing viewer of the cartoons and stuff if there was a little bit more familiarity to draw on. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a huge deal? No, but, you know, it would have been cheaper for them to go that way anyways.
Oh, it would have been definitely cheaper. Yeah, because, I mean...
And if they had used the same style and stuff for everything as the Justice League cartoon... Couldn't they have reused some of the footage from the Superman Shazam fight for this? Not that I'm saying they should. Seeing a new DVD, I'd like to see new footage for everything. But, you know, if they have to cut corners, that seems to be a way they could do it.
I'm all for that. And that would have been a good way to get some more damage thrown in there. Because I said this before, there was more damage in that episode than there was in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Where was the scene from the comics where they shattered the glass windows for 5 miles or whatever with the two fists meeting each other? I wanted that at least once, whether Superman Doomsday or Superman Superman. Come on, that was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't get that at all in this. But
no.
Eh. All right. Well, at this point, I think we should just remind people that we did like things about this.
No, we should be not.
Well, but still, we've been dumping on it for a solid like 40, like 30, 40 minutes here.
Well,
so that's why, I mean,
dumping on it. We're pointing out areas it could have been better. Mm-hmm. And certainly for me, it's not that I didn't like it. It's just that it was hyped and marketed in a manner that set my expectations in a way that it was never going to meet.
Yeah.
If I had gone in with a more open mind and wasn't spending half the time thinking, what the hell are those damn lines on the cheekbones? Getting used to the new voices, and what the hell just happened in the story that wasn't where I was expecting it to go for a faithful adaptation?
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have walked out of there thinking it was brilliant. It was a good film.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't, you know, the one I was expecting.
Yeah. I mean, John was sitting there with me when we saw it, and I think I actually remember turning to you at one point and saying, all right, this isn't that bad. But once they get to the actual, like, return of Superman stuff, that's when it's going to start getting better. And then my expectations were met with a clone Superman.
Mm-hmm.
My entire perception of the film was sort of blown by that because I didn't see this coming. I thought I was getting, you know, something different. So
yeah, I mean, I was looking forward to, okay, what are they going to do with Steel? They've had Michael Dorn on the cartoon doing Steel, that kind of stuff. This could be fun. Mm-hmm. Sure, we're not going to see tons of him, but let's see what they do with it. Well,
plus,
nothing.
Not only that, I was actually imagining in my head what it would look like animated to have that moment where Steel puts on a suit and you get to see animated, finally, like a flashback while he's putting on the suit for the first time of Superman saving Steel from that construction site, which is so iconic in my head because I remember reading that and thinking to myself, wow, this is a reason to become a superhero because you're alive because of this person.
What they should have been doing with these is not a series of DVD movies, but essentially a series of TV miniseries for the Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
Something where this would have gone for, you know, three or four nights or something and actually told the full damn story.
Sure.
Do you think they would have worked better if they had two movies, like The Death and Funeral and then The Return of Superman being another separate 70-minute movie?
Yes.
I think you need even more time than that, depending how much of the story you're going
to
tell.
Well, I had said earlier that a trilogy would have worked to me, that you could have very well just told the death here, gone on to Funeral for a Friend / Rain, and then return.
Well, yeah, and if you go with 3 nights, 2-hour blocks, figure that's, what, 88 minutes apiece,
mm-hmm.
you'd have had time.
Yeah, but
even with previously on sort of footage and stay tuned for tomorrow night's episode or whatever.
Yeah, but that's just not what they wanted to do with this. They wanted to have one and out, which is already thinking in my head, like, wouldn't Judas Contract work so well if it was a miniseries?
Well, Judas Contract is 4 issues, one of which was a little, say, oversized. We'll say 5 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking 128 pages roughly. The death of Superman stuff, that went on for quite a few more than that.
Yes.
That was 12 just for the death part.
Yeah, that was at least, I think in the end it was at least like 36 to 40 issues.
I think you could do it in an hour.
The death of Superman was like 7 issues, and I think it was like 8 or 9 with the World Without Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But the return was like 20 issues or something.
Yeah. Yeah, because they wanted to stretch that because they knew what they had going.
Well, I mean, even New Frontier, that's 6 issues, but those were, what, 48 pages each?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit of material.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be stuff that's cut out from New Frontier, obviously, because it's a movie.
Potentially half or two-thirds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I can see Challenger of the Unknown and the dinosaur scene going away.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Any characters that are not pivotal to the main story, gone.
Mm-hmm. No question. All right, at this point, let's do a quick wrap-up of the Superman Doomsday, and let's actually go forward into a bit of a preview for New Frontier and what we're expecting from that, specifically with the voice actors. I want to see whether or not you guys think they're going to do a good job or not. So, yeah, final wrap-up of Superman Doomsday. Give me a quick wrap-up of your positives and negatives here one last time. And, again, whatever you want to say, say it, positives, negatives, whatever. Just let the people know what you think. And we'll start with you, Brent.
I definitely think it is a good film. I mean, I do think all of these animated movies, whether from Marvel or DC, need to ditch the 70-minute time length and go for a full hour and a half, add on another 20 minutes, another 30, do 2 hours. I know it's expensive and all that, but, you know, 20 minutes is not going to kill you. Go for a full hour and a half, I think, will improve things all around in all of these movies. But, I mean, the Superman Doomsday fight in the beginning is great. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, for what it is at the end, it's still good. I mean, I had some problems with it here, but, you know, I was really – if you listen back on it, I was kind of nitpicking the whole time. So it is enjoyable, and first time around when I watched it, I really did like it. And like I said in the beginning, the DVD feature about the actual comics – where they have all the comics and writers and artists and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that's like an hour long is totally worth the rental or purchase, whichever you want.
Yeah.
That kind of redeems the movie, even if you think it sucked.
I'm glad I didn't pay for this movie. I'm glad I didn't purchase it. I was going to at first. But when I went to San Diego Comic-Con, I'm like, okay, great, they're showing it, so that'll at least give me a way to find out whether or not I do want to purchase this. At this point, it's definitely a rent, not a buy. And I will sit down and watch it again at one point. Probably, like Brent mentioned, because of that because of that documentary, I'll probably go and at least rent it from Netflix, and I'll watch the full feature again to see how it feels when I'm sitting at home. It did a good job of telling a story. It just wasn't the story I wanted to see. And I think I made that clear as time went on here. If they would have just said, this is a Superman Doomsday story separate from the comic books, then I would have been perfectly fine. But they had to say the words faithful, and it wasn't faithful. John?
Yeah, if you're interested in a movie that was inspired by those events in the comics, this does a fairly good job. There are a few things that didn't work for me, but a lot of it was some artistic things like that. People may have different tastes. It was a good story. It was a good DVD. It was a good film. It was good voice acting, stuff like that. But it was inspired by, not based on. It was not a faithful adaptation. And if you go in with that mindset of here's going to be a streamlined version of the comic storyline, and it'll focus on Superman and Metropolis and pretty much anything outside of that, if you can accept, that's going to get cut and they're going to have to rewrite accordingly, and they do a good job in those cuts and the rewrite, you'll be happy with this. It's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, yeah. And it actually reminds me a lot of what Marvel has done with their animated features. Iron Man is an Iron Man story, but it's just an Iron Man story. It's an origin, sure, but it's not specifically based on something. It's inspired by other tales that have been told, but they do their own thing, just like Superman Doomsday did here. Same thing with Doctor Strange, and obviously Ultimate Avengers takes heavily from the Ultimates, but it's not quite that. Just tell different stories. If you're going to tell different stories, be faithful. If you're going to be faithful, just make sure to tell us ahead of time what you're doing. And if you, one more time, I'll say it. If you haven't seen Doctor Strange, go ahead and see Doctor Strange. That's a fantastic Marvel movie. Probably my favorite of the ones that they put out so far. But that's another story, I guess. All right, on to New Frontier. We got voice actors. Again, we're going with the famous voice actors over the established voice actors for these characters. However, I think they made good choices. From the animation that you've seen so far, is it faithful enough for you, animation style-wise, Brent?
I definitely think so. I think everything that John was looking for here about faithful being in animation, I think New Frontier is going to be that and more. Just from what I've seen on this on the Superman Return or Doomsday DVD, they've got like an 8-minute thing about it. I think they show a little more animation than they do on YouTube or anything like that. And it really does look like they pulled the comic out of it and did some flash animation, but better. It's totally Darwin Cook style. It's not Bruce Timm style, even though they're kind of derivative of each other, but, you know, I think that animation-wise and, you know, stuff like that is going to be great. Story, who knows? You know, I have to watch it when it comes out, and then I'll go back and reread New Frontier after I watch the movie and see what it is. I'm kind of looking forward to Lucy Lawless as Wonder Woman since she's kind of always been, like, in the back of everybody's mind when they say a live-action Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Because of Xena.
Yeah.
And in the Superman Doomsday DVD, they have her doing the Amazon call, which is kind of the same thing as the Xena call. Well, actually, it's not kind of the same. It's exactly
it's
the same.
It's exactly the same. Come on, man.
It was cool to hear it again. I mean, come on.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You haven't heard it in a while. And it actually, when I saw the YouTube clip, I remembered that there was a Hercules and Xena animated feature that came out.
Yes, there was.
Forever ago. That I never actually sat down and watched, that I might want to try and track down now just to see what, because the animation style looks absolutely horrible. I know it was like one of those things that was done in like 2 minutes, but it's one of the few Hercules and Xena things I haven't seen yet that I might want to actually pull out now just to see her in like another animated feature as a animated warrior with an animated yell scream.
Yeah, it looks like they're doing like the John Jones story and the Hal Jordan story, so And I know they're definitely doing that little Flash bit. I'm looking forward to those because we haven't seen much of them animated-wise.
Yeah, and we haven't actually found out who's going to be voicing John Jones yet either. He's one of the few that wasn't actually on that list, last I checked.
Well, then I guess he won't be anybody big then, right?
Well, who knows? I mean, it's possible they might just be holding off until the end. But, yeah, John.
Carl Lumley would be a good choice. Mm-hmm. David Ogden Steers would be an interesting choice. Mm-hmm.
Definitely Lawrence Fishburne. I want him as my John Jones. I almost said Jeff Johns. I want him as my Jeff Johns. He's going to be fantastic. When they
the guy from Smallville wouldn't be that bad either. He's got a nice deep voice.
Yeah. Just get somebody with a nice commanding deep voice and I'll be happy. But Lawrence Fishburne would be the one that I would pick.
What about Kevin Grivo, the guy who's writing New Warriors? He's really gravelly. He's like freakishly deep.
Yeah.
Haven't you heard him talk?
I don't think I have, actually. I don't know.
He's in Underworld or something.
Oh, him! Okay, all right.
And he has that absurdly deep, gravelly voice. Yeah. You'd be like, there's no way that's real. Yeah, that guy.
That guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
John, animation style work for you?
Yeah, from what I've seen, I think it'll be fairly faithful and stuff. I expect the story to be reasonably faithful. Again, it'll be streamlined. They're going to have to cut some stuff just to fit it into the time allotted. But I think that a standalone miniseries like New Frontier lends itself to that more than kind of a big sprawling epic on an ongoing series.
Agreed. Yeah. And what's great is that with something like this, you can actually use comic books for what they're meant to be. When it comes to animated, they are literally storyboards for the animated feature. That's what the New Frontier comic is being used as. In the featurette, they actually had Darwin Cook mention that it was amazing for him to see his pages on the screen, entire scenes worked out, and then there would be that, you know, that pause moment where you'd see that exact page, but there'd be an entire feature length animated story behind it, which is exactly what you need to do. Use it as the template and make something great out of it, and that's definitely what I think they're going to end up doing with New Frontier. We're going to be happy about this. We definitely are going to be happy about this.
Well, and also, since it had just the single artist for New Frontier, it's got a more focused artistic vision, mm-hmm. whereas the Superman Doomsday stuff, there were so many artists that worked on that, you know, you sure, you could go with the Jurgen stuff, but there's none that's kind of this is the art style for all of it.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they do on Judas Contract, because one of the hallmarks of George Perez's work is the details. And that doesn't really work too well in an animated feature sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some very well-detailed animated features out in the past, but I don't know how good they're going to be able to do it here. I'm going to have to go with probably one of the most detailed animated shows that I remember seeing was actually the X-Men animated series that captured the feel of X-Men very, very well to me. They're going to have to get something that's captures the feel of Teen Titans incredibly well out there to please everybody.
For me, that's the make or break one. That's the material I've got the most kind of a personal connection to an investment in. Mm-hmm. Sure, I like the Superman Doomsday stuff. I have a little interest in the New Frontier stuff. But, you know, the New Titans was a lot of what really got me hooked on some of the comics.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, sidetrack for a minute. Did any of you guys actually see the preview image they put out there for the new Wolverine and the X-Men?
No.
Yeah.
It's actually the costumes that they're using are straight from Astonishing X-Men.
Isn't that straight from the last movie?
Wait, straight from what?
Those comics, or those costumes, seem to have been influenced heavily by some of the movies.
Yes. Yeah. The only difference is that they added a coat to Cyclops, which I'm not quite sold on yet. But the rest, I mean, it looks like it's actually going to be pretty faithful to that. I hope it actually turns out to be good, but that's probably a good step for Marvel right there. Their Sensational Spider-Man looks good, and Wolverine and the X-Men, again, from that one preview image, looks like it should be good. So maybe they're going to have a new, like, age for Marvel animation for the first time since the 90s, maybe.
Well, I think it's great that both Marvel and DC are getting these things direct to DVD and out there.
Definitely.
Because when these things are hitting, you know, Walmart and Targets and stuff like that, and people can pick them up for, you know, 14, 15 bucks or whatever. I mean, I don't know what numbers these things are doing, but I would imagine even if every Walmart gets, you know, two copies and sells them, and we know they're getting, you know, exponentially more than that. Mm-hmm. You know, the comics are, you know, a drop in the bucket compared to that.
Well,
so it's getting the material out there to people.
Well, I don't know if you guys heard that Kids WB is no more.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, that
with these new series and stuff, I don't know where they're going to go.
I don't know either. I mean, as of this next fall, there will no longer be a Kids WB. It's being replaced by 4Kids, which made my eyes roll. Ugh. It's going to be basically preschool stuff, and they say that Kids WB is entirely gone, which probably means that the stuff that is on WB is either going to be relocated to a different time slot or on Cartoon Network. I would just go Cartoon Network. Because that's
Cartoon Network seems the more likely choice.
It is for me as well, because, well, obviously it's the same company, so it just makes sense to make the rollover to there, or else they will go straight to DVD, which would be interesting to see. Perhaps maybe, I mean, I doubt this is going to happen, but maybe an entire season direct to DVD.
I'd like to see some studio experiment with that format and do something a bit more aggressive or assertive than just, you know, here's a 70-minute animated feature.
Yeah.
You know, a 90-minute TV, you know, direct-to-DVD movie or whatever, like they're doing with Babylon 5 and Stargate and stuff.
Yeah.
Because if they can get to where they can go kind of straight to DVD and kind of skip the broadcast venue entirely, that opens up a lot of options for them.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, we'll wait and see what ends up happening on that, but let's move back to New Frontier here for a minute. I'm just going to roll down the list, and you guys can give me your thoughts on the casting. David Boreanaz as Hal Jordan, a.k.a. Green Lantern, obviously. Brent?
I think it's brilliant.
Go ahead, John.
I think it's brilliant. I think he's a great choice for that. I think he'll fit fine.
Yeah. Well, he's a guy I always actually kind of imagined as a live-action Hal Jordan in my head.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, he fits the bill, and he's got a voice that's very commanding, which you need as Hal Jordan, so that works for me. Brent, agree?
I would have to say, yeah. I mean, he does – you see him in the – thing on this DVD, I mean, him doing the voice and stuff works pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Everybody suit up. Neil Patrick Harris is Barry Allen / The Flash. All I have to say is hell freaking yeah.
The only thing I've really seen with Neil Patrick Harris is his stuff in Harold and Kumar, so I'm going to have to say pass.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
I was not of age when Doogie Howser was on or anything like that.
You don't watch How I Met Your Mother?
No.
Okay. Because he's... You know what? Actually, see if you can find maybe a clip on YouTube of that and sample his voice from there. And he can be serious at times. So his voice is very youthful, which lends to a character like The Flash. However, I am thinking in my head he'd probably make a better Wally than a Barry.
See, that was my next question, was I've had Wally on the JLU, which I've watched, you know, so recently. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, this is Barry. It's a different guy. So well, I don't know if...
It's also it's going to be a younger Flash, because obviously it's New Frontier.
Okay, but Barry, when he was younger, or even as a character, was he cracking jokes all the time like Wally kind of is or was at times?
Actually, you'd probably be able to answer that better than us.
No, not really. He was very straight-laced. He was not the loose jokester kind of character that Wally is. Mm-hmm. So I think Neil Patrick Harris is a great actor, and I'm sure he'll do an excellent job. I don't know that he would have been, you know, one of the first 10 names on my list for the Barry Allen Flash. Of course, I don't know who would have been on that list either. I agree. He seems like a better fit for Wally,
yeah.
And I certainly could see him having done that, you know, had he been on JLU or whatever instead of Michael Rosenbaum.
In fact, I could have even seen him, and obviously this would be something that wouldn't really work now, but maybe even voicing Bart as Impulse. Because he can give himself even a youthful quality that would work for a teenager.
Yeah, I could see that. And didn't he do the MTV Spider-Man series?
Yes, he did. Wait, did he? Actually, I'm trying.
I thought he was Spider-Man.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was him.
He started that stuff.
Yeah, he
I really liked that series.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of that. I thought, actually, that there was going to be a second season, but they obviously decided not to go with that. But he was actually very, very good in that. He was my favorite voice, no question.
Yeah.
Both as Peter Parker and Spider-Man worked really well. Lucy Lawless as Wonder Woman, we're pretty much agreed that's going to be great, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's nobody else who can voice Wonder Woman in my head. This is the most interesting casting out of everything so far that I've seen. Jeremy Sisto, who I know from 6 Feet Under, most specifically, and he was also on, was it Kidnapped from last season, I think? That was the NBC show he was on, as Bruce Wayne / Batman. He's got a very gravelly, deep voice, so he might be able to work that well. But I guess we'll wait and see what it's going to actually turn out like on the screen. It's either going to be hit or miss for me. He could be great, or he could miss the mark. I hope he's going to be great for my sake. John?
You know, it's funny. I could almost see David Boreanaz doing Bruce Wayne, too. Mm. Yeah, I'm not that familiar with Sisto, so I don't know.
Brent, you know him at all?
I'm going to have to